Well, happy Thursday. It is so good to have you at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone line and the Twitter machine and the email address and all of these other multitudinous ways we have to communicate now, which really makes for great conversation on multiple levels. And that's what Perspectives is all about and what you're listening to on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. And we really have a great program lined up today because we'll first remind you that you can always join the conversation by calling 414-1234. If it's local, if it's long distance for you, we'll pick up the tab there, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address, and that old Twitter handle there is at WFSU Perspective. Can't we all just get along? You remember that? Yeah, that was Rodney King. So many years ago, you recall that he was brutally beaten up by the Los Angeles Police Department and then the subsequent riots that came on the heels of that. And that simple phrase might best capture the desire of most folks for peace, which is not only peace in our own lives, peace in our community, world peace certainly, but that peace just seems to be consistently just beyond our grasp. And we tend to default to these baser instincts for some reason, and it kind of gets in the way of the whole peace thing. So we thought we would bring on today on Perspectives some members of the Tallahassee Area Peace Alliance to talk about all of those ramifications of peace and how we can maybe become a little bit more peaceful in our own lives, and like the proverbial ripple or pebble in the pond effect, that might spread out to other folks that we know. And who knows where it can go from there. So let's get started and talk to some really, really great people today. Well, we're going to first say hi to Cindy Bigby. She has a doctorate in instructional systems design, extensive experience in program evaluation, has been on a personal mission to teach herself and then others Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication process. And one of the iterations of that is over at the Palmer Monroe Center, where there's a teen center. And Cindy, you've been working a lot with that. We really want to hear some more about that today.
Yeah, it's my favorite topic to talk about. It's actually a dream come true to be able to be over there and teaching these skills to people at an early age so that they hopefully can have a more peaceful life. It's been a blessing, honestly.
Yeah, we've been following that project, gosh, ever since it opened. It stopped being just a regular community center and then also became part of the juvenile justice system, mm-hmm. although that's sort of a stealthy way to, you know, try to keep the kids out of trouble. So we'll be talking about that a whole bunch here. Julia Rose Denholm also joins us. She serves as coordinator for the Miccosukee Land Co-op, a place not entirely unknownst to us, just east of Tallahassee, back in 1973. God, it doesn't seem that long ago.
Mm-hmm. I grew up out there and then moved away for several years. And when I decided to have kids, came back because that's where I wanted to have them, at home with my family.
Yeah, Tallahassee remains a great place to raise a family.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. You're also a trained mediator through nonviolent communication, a facilitator of restorative circles, all manner of things. And want to talk to you some more about that. Rachel Kelly, local acupuncturist and program coordinator for this very show. And really, thank you a lot, Rachel. And we want to talk about how you got involved in all this, too.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here and to be helping to share all of the great work that people like Pam and Julia and Cindy are doing. And that's why I'm here, because my skills are in healthcare, but these people are doing really important work to improve all of our quality of lives. And I want people to know what's available and help support them as well.
Well, peace as it relates to healthcare even, which is a topic in and of itself.
Indeed.
We could hit that for a number of hours here. Well, you mentioned Pam. Let's meet Pamela Chamberlain, owner of Integrative Health Coach Services and Consulting right here in Tallahassee. Been working for peace since, Nam. We all remember Vietnam. Oh, my Lord. CNN has a great series right now, The 60s, which focuses so much on what that era was all about and how pivotal the entire war was to that era. So we still remember that so vividly today, don't we?
I do. That was my awakening at age 17, 18, leaving home, going to college. not protesting the war, because I've always been for peace, not against anything. That's a real important difference to me, to be for something instead of fighting against something. You can't fight against things and think you're going to find peace. So I've been quietly working for peace as I can find opportunities or create opportunities to do that for quite a few decades now.
Well, bottom line, let's start with you here, Pam. Is peace even possible?
Yes, it absolutely is. There is a paradigm. There is a skill set. There is research proving the effectiveness of the skill set, which is fairly recent, the last few decades. But the human race is evolving, and peace is absolutely possible. Peace is going to happen. It's going to take people being willing to, one by one, choose peace and learn how to be peaceful.
It's not intuitive then, and certainly not instinctive, because when we hit conflict, our first instinct is to become defensive, to hit back. I mean, peace is not something that comes naturally to us, is it?
I'm going to disagree with that. I think peace, compassion, self-awareness are all quite natural, quite instinctive to human beings. We have been acculturated out of what's natural to us in the parts of our brain that are more recently evolved, certainly, than the reptilian brain of fight, flight, or freeze. But peace is very instinctive. It's in there. It's buried beneath a lot of fear and anger. But it's absolutely instinctive and quite natural to the human race.
Well, I've got to ask Cindy Bigby about that, since that's what you deal with there, particularly at the Palmer Monroe Center. But after a million years, why haven't we found peace yet?
Why haven't we found? Well, basically because we are learning a whole bunch of other ways to be with one another. It's more about learned behavior. I think if you think about most babies when they're born, they come into this world in a pretty peaceful place, or at least when they're not at peace, they can communicate it and get their needs met and come back into a place of peace. So I think it's all about what we're actually learning. And it for me, it's a lot about our communication skills and how we have learned to actually communicate with one another. And so much of our just daily interaction is laden with judgment. Even when we're not aware that we have judgment, we're talking from a judgmental place. Just so much of our the way that we the words that come out of our mouth, just what I just said, so much of the words that come out of our mouth is actually a judgment, okay? Instead of with nonviolent communication, which is the process that I teach in the community and also at the teen center, we start to talk about what is an observation versus an evaluation, speaking from that place along with what needs are alive for us in the circumstance. So it takes away a lot of the judgment that ends up happening between people when we're not even aware of it, whether we're in conflict or not. So it's a whole relearning.
Wow. Think before you talk?
Even more than think, get really in touch with what's going on with yourself internally before you talk. So it's more than just thinking. It's actually touching into what's alive for you at a visceral, bodily level.
Okay.
And then speaking from that place.
Okay. Julia Rose Denham, what does peace mean to you? I mean, personally.
So for me, a lot of it goes into, well, definitely how I function within my community as being the coordinator of the co-op. You know, we are this long-time community, as you said, founded in 73. So there's been a lot of time for a lot of beauty to come out of that. There's also been a lot of time for a lot of hurt and pain. And part of what I've seen as my role as coordinator, something that I've wanted to take on, is really trying to foster more a sense of willingness to engage and really ask questions from each other and about each other rather than I think it can be dangerous sometimes when we have known people for so long and we get the sense that we know them. And in some ways we do, but we also don't necessarily really know what's going on for them. We don't know what's true in that moment. Excuse me. And so if we can really get to this place where we're curious and not just going into it thinking we know, I think the possibility for connection and mutual understanding is a lot greater. So that's one of the things I really am trying to I don't want to say instill necessarily, but promote, encourage, support in the community.
All right, because I was thinking of some of the founders, including some folks very close to you, of the community, and Chuck Mitchell and those guys out at the co-op.
Yeah.
And the original vision was, if we take peaceful people or peace-loving people, bring them together into a community, and we have these shared values and aspirations and all, it will be a peaceful place. And as you pointed out, sometimes that hasn't been the case out at the old co-op. There's been some contention out there.
Yeah. And I think that it's actually been a wake-up call to a lot of people, you know, because I think that people did believe that for a long time. And there has been a greater awareness about that over the past, I'd say, 2 or 3 years in particular, that, maybe we do need to really maybe practice some of these approaches, actually practice being peaceful. And actually, Cindy came out and taught one of her nonviolent communication classes out there, and we had a good number of participants. And it's great because it's offered us this other language that we can use with each other.
Can I just
jump in?
Because I think people have this idea that peace is like love, you know, that's what they think about when they think of peace. But peace is actually can be very messy. Mm. To get to a place of peace, which I think is really about connection with another human being, it can be very messy to get to that point. So. Yeah, I just want to, you know, state that's the processes that we use to get to that place of flow and connection between one another where there is no thinking of judgment can actually be a lot of work and painful and can be messy. So I just want to point that out because it's not like, whoa, we're all just happy and, you know, life is perfect. That's not what we're talking
about.
You're
not singing Kumbaya here.
No, we're not singing Kumbaya. In fact, you know, I think those of us sitting around this table will all admit that, you know, even though we work for peace and our lives are pretty much about making that happen, that we come in and out of peaceful places ourselves, you know, and that it's maybe not this permanent place, but it's a place where you're striving to work towards. And as part of that striving, you get into some messy places. But the end result, using the processes that we're talking about, or hopefully we will be talking about, the end result is always a place of real completion and connection with the other person. That is always possible with what we're talking about here.
And it sounds like you're also saying that peace is not a destination, it is a journey.
Definitely.
All right. And we're going to talk to you too, Rachel Kelly, about how you can become more peaceful when you're sticking needles into people. That's coming up right here on Perspectives. Members of the Peace Alliance with us this morning, 414-1234, local 800-926-8809, long distance, Perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. Perspectives on the air, talking about peace this morning with Cindy Bigby, Julia Rose Denholm, Rachel Kelly, and Pamela Chamberlain right here. And your input, of course, is welcome, as always, at 414-1234. Speaking of Rachel Kelly, volunteer for action team for the Peace Alliance in a leadership position. First, let's talk about that. What exactly does that entail, Rachel?
It entails getting to hang out with these wonderful people and talk to other people in the community, petition our senators and representatives to pass legislation that can support the grassroots evidence-based work that's being done in local communities around the country.
Okay, now that's a peaceful place. If you watch the Florida legislature in session, as we did, several months ago, that maybe not quite as dramatic as it usually is this year. Election year, everyone kind of keeps things low key. You don't want to give the opposition any ammo. But how do you persuade those folks that there is another way other than squaring off and socking someone in the jaw verbally, if not physically?
Well, the nice thing about this particular work, things like the Youth Promise Act that's before the National Congress this year, is that it's just a win-win situation. There's nothing to oppose about being effective, and so it's a pretty easy sell for these people.
Yeah, the concept, even though. I mean, that sounds wonderful, but when you get into the nuts and bolts, is it a tougher sell?
It takes time. Everything takes time. And I think even the question of that you alluded to earlier about, you know, what our inherent nature is it peaceful or is it a pugilant, it takes time. And even being in a complete state of health doesn't mean that you are without disease, you know, speaking from a healthcare perspective. And so it's just, you know, where we want to put our attention, what we want to feed.
And how does an improvement in health, because you are an acupuncturist, and that's part of the total process here of moving to a more healthy and or hopefully and peaceful situation. Mm-hmm. How does that help?
How does acupuncture help?
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I've never thought about acupuncture with the Peace Alliance, but we're all, you know, working to be in balance with each other and with the world. And so we can work on one level, you know, internally, you know, like how we feed ourselves and how we nourish ourselves, and being comfortable in our own bodies helps us to have attention for other people. You know, just like a lot of the people that are being funneled into the prisons are also not able to afford organic fruits and vegetables. You know, it's a big view, and each of us has our own little piece of that pie that we work on.
Well, let's add to the conversation some views from an old friend of ours, Mr. Mahoney, who is on line one. Hey, Reed, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Tom. How about yourself?
I could not be doing better if we tried, sir.
Well, good. You know, I'm obviously loving this conversation. Being a longtime salesperson, marketer, soothing bruised egos is something I've concentrated on for years, and I think that's where a lot of the problem stems from, is just simply ego. But I look at it from a historical perspective. I remember reading that Abraham Lincoln was criticized for filling his cabinet with his political foes, and someone asked him, why do you help your friends when you should be out to destroy them? He said, why do you help your enemies when you should be out to destroy them? He said, do I not destroy them when I make them my friends? And, you know, it occurs to me that a well-chosen word can turn an enemy into a friend pretty quickly.
Well, that is something we can certainly consider. I'm watching Cindy Bigby here, just ready to jump in on this one, because you work particularly with younger people who, in today's environment, particularly some of the kids who hang out at the Palmer Monroe Center, I mean, just for survival, they have to put this hard shell, you know, tough swagger type, don't mess with me, I will take you down so fast you won't even know what hit you. And how do you kind of peel that away? Because you got happy, peaceful kids somewhere inside there, don't you?
Mm. That's a big question, yeah. And they're beautiful, really. They're beautiful, those kids in the program. But I have to say, when I first started working with them a year ago, it's only taken me till right about now that when I start a new cycle in the Community Connections Program, which is the restorative justice program that operates out of Palmer Monroe, I'm usually scared just because of myself, because I just get nervous about everything, you know. And you can, like, look at the exterior and think, you know, these are some tough cookies, right? So what we're doing at the in the Community Connections Program is we're teaching the nonviolent communication process, which is all about really cultivating a power-sharing environment instead of a power-over environment. So, you know, so much of our society and our organizations and structures are all about controlling and making somebody do something. And it's almost like, you know, deeply embedded in us, in you know, even a parent-to-child interaction. It's this power-over thing. So it's kind of flipping a model upside its head and really cultivating this power-sharing thing. And as a result, you know, the kids, they really respond to it. So much of what we're teaching in NVC is how to give and receive empathy, which is basically presence. So many of those kids in there really are just dying to be heard without judgment. And when you can actually set up a situation where they are heard without judgment, which I've been bringing in many, many volunteers, our community is awesome. I've set up a one-to-one ratio. We sit in circle with the kids as we learn the NVC process, and I have as many volunteers in the class as I do kids. just so that when we break up into dyads, the kids do have an opportunity, probably some of them for the first time in their lives, to be heard deeply without any judgment. And that in and of itself, when we start going to that process, it's amazing. I wish I could take pictures of their faces because they physically change the way that they look. They go from that hard, you know, kind of scary, some of them, not all of them, to all of a sudden this soft, open, you know, and many of them have said right after the empathy process, like, wow, like, I've never had an interaction like that, you know. I've never talked to somebody like that before. And it honestly, it changes them. Even just one interaction like that, I've noticed, changes them.
Well, this isn't just limited to Palmer and Monroe. Now, you go public with these too, don't you?
Yes, I do. Thank you. I love teaching this work to anybody, and I think it's applicable to anybody. Marshall Rosenberg, the guy who developed this process, he's been up for the Nobel Peace Prize several times. This work is being done all over the world. Just a bunch of NVC trainers were just in Israel trying to do some NVC work with the Israeli-Palestinian process. So it's everywhere. I myself teach it here to the community. In fact, I have a workshop coming up next week on Friday. It's a two-day Friday, Saturday, June 13th and 14th. It's going to be held at the Abundance Wellness Center. And if anybody wants more information about that, you can go to my website, which I'm guessing I can post.
Sure.
Maybe.
Yeah, we can do that too. Well, you brought up some things here, Pam Chamberlain. I want to run by you too. The stripping away of the facade of the tough guy or whatever requires some vulnerability. And is that not an impediment to peace? I mean, we got to be tough. We got to be assertive. We have to be dominant in a conversation if we're going to get anywhere, because otherwise we're weak. We will be dominated. We will be beat up, essentially. And doesn't that kind of stand in the way?
It does. But that's optional. That's how most of us grew up, what you just described. In order to survive, we had to choose a paradigm and learn a skill set that stuffed our soul down, that denied who and what we are as an individual. And what Dr. Bigby is doing is inviting these children one by one to rediscover themselves, to learn that there is another way of being in the world that can be relearned, that can be remembered, because this is a natural part of the brain that we can all access, that we have forgotten, that we have had acculturated out of us. So it's pretty exciting. We're not trying to insert something brand new into people. We're inviting them to reconsider the choices they have, the skills they have learned, and to go with something that's going to give them better results in their lives. The bottom line here is, does it work? Medicine Man Sun Bear said, if your God doesn't grow corn, he's not worth a damn. I think he put that a little bit more strongly. I'm putting that politely. But that's it, results. And what I see in the Youth Promise Act and the evidence-based programs is it gets results for anybody who wants results. And I know I've just been volunteering a little bit with Cindy's program. There are some kids that are not ready yet they're going to have to invest a lot in changing their lives, and they're 100% responsible for that. Dr. Bigby creates an environment. The mentors are there to support this community connection environment. Some of the kids aren't ready for that yet, but most of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And it plants a seed, and that seed starts naturally growing because peace is natural to human beings. And there are many natural cultures around the world that do live in peace. And, of course, then there's the cultural paradigm that dominates them and steals their land. And, you know, so there are different paradigms, different skill sets.
Well, I'm thinking of maybe even some of the Pacific Rim cultures.
Yes.
That seem, even though there's wide, I mean, you can't get much more isolated. You're on
right.
An island, literally, and the nearest folks may be, I don't know, 100 miles away. But somehow they were able to, there's some warfare going on, but not to the extent that we seem to see in our culture.
Right, right.
And how did they become so much more advanced than we are?
I think when they had babies, the babies were brought up with a natural ability for peace that Dr. Bigby said. Babies are born peaceful for the most part. And then does that get acculturated out of them? Does their soul get stolen? Not blaming parents or anything like that. This is a systems issue of what is the system, which is why I think we have such violence in the school. I'm personally, as grandmother, real concerned about the school shootings. And I look at that from a systems perspective. I hold the person who commits an act of violence, any act of violence, I hold them 100% accountable for their actions. And I understand the system which breeds violence, which destroys souls so that they are capable of taking horrific rage and vengeance against their fellow people. That's learned behavior, as Dr. Bigby pointed out.
It sounds like Lord of the Flies, though.
Yes.
And except the premise of that book was that, well, this is the natural way. You leave people to their own devices and they will devolve into these, you know, horrible, you know, warmongering tribal kind of people.
The research is indicating that cooperation is a natural human quality. Mutual benefit is natural to human beings. It has to be acculturated out of us.
And I am seeing the evidence of, you know, I am seeing the evidence of people reaching towards more peaceful ways with the kids with whom I work and also in the community. And I do want to back up, too, to what you said about being a systems issue, because I think that's the whole point of the Peace Alliance is, you know, trying to have an organization that can address this issue at a systems level. You know, I'm so happy that I get to do the work at the ground level, but it is a systems, and we do have to address all of our institutions, and it has to start really at a policy level so that the monies and the focus and the priorities kind of, you know, trickle down and, you know, are basically addressed.
Well, Julia Rose Denholm, how you talk about systems. Let's talk about the Miccosukee Land Co-op as a system to promote greater cooperation and less conflict and that sort of. Are there specific rules, a charter, a constitution? How does that happen?
Yeah, you know, we have we definitely have our governing documents that we try to live by. But on top of that, like, you know, what I was talking about earlier was we started doing talking circles is what we call them. And so there'll be a topic that comes up and maybe it generates a lot of heat in the community. And so we hold a circle about it. And it's a time, you know, and I make it pretty clear that it's a time – we're not going to get anything decided necessarily. It's just a time for people to come together and get a chance to speak and have their voices heard. But also really – and I try to emphasize this too. It's a time to listen, to really just step back and not necessarily think about what you're going to say in response. You know, because so often someone's talking to you and rather than really hearing them, you're already formulating your response. And so that removes you from the present and – and so in these circles, it's really about listening to what everyone else has to say. And as Cindy was saying earlier, just, you know, with as little judgment as possible, just and really valuing whatever they're contributing to the discussion. I also wanted to say, though, if I may, something that came up for me was about, you know, we've talked about peace on like the level that Cindy's talking about at the Teen Center and then also, you know, in terms of legislation, like we've referred to the Youth Promise Act. I also want to say, too, that the study of peace for me personally has been huge in terms of how I take it into my parenting. I have two young girls, they're 3 and 7. And for me, so much of it is about recognizing that I always have options. You know, so if one of them does something and I think to react one way, and then I think, no, you know what? I actually have choices here. And what's the point? Like, what am I really wanting? Am I wanting to punish or am I wanting to connect with them? And am I wanting to actually, make contact with them rather than push them further away, which would be my old pattern? So I guess I just want to put a plug in for you know, just realizing that you can use this on every level.
Yeah, and it's a learning experience for mm-hmm. for the girls, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ideally, then, you know, they take it to their friends and to their schools, and there is that ripple effect that we've talked about.
Okay, well, Rachel Kelly, there's also another conflicted place that I think many of us can relate to, and that is the workplace. Do these sorts of principles also apply there, too? In an environment where there may be a lot of contention anyway, there's competition. You're in competition with coworkers. You're trying to take control of situations so that you'll be viewed as an assertive, competent leader within your own area. And that generates more opportunities for conflict, doesn't it? If you kind of back off and try to cooperate with everyone, well, again, you'll be weak, you'll be vulnerable.
Well, the principles of nonviolent communication and how this process works are applicable everywhere, at home, in the workplace, and it doesn't take much to just shift the focus from snowballing downhill into being someone who can transform the environment. And I don't think the question is anymore, is peace possible? It's as obvious as wearing seatbelts and recycling is to us now. It wasn't that long ago that those were just weird things or not even thought of. Like, they didn't make cars with seatbelts. And now those are just really natural and normal things that young people today don't even have to think about. And these processes are the same thing. There's not a question of whether it's effective or whether it works. It's just now making it as natural and comfortable part of the way that we communicate with each other.
Actually, there's some research that came out of the Wharton School of Business and Harvard School of Business looking at what makes some of the most effective organizations to date, like what helps them to set themselves apart. And the information coming out from them is that old organizations were two-dimensional, meaning two dimensions of plan and do. The way that we do things, the way that we operate in a business organization is we plan and we do. We plan and we do. The most effective organizations are actually those that are now what they call three. They have a third dimension, which is they connect plan and do. They have explicitly built in connection, and that's not just going happy hour with your colleagues. It's like, how do you actually sit in circle and really know each other at a very authentic level? Lots of productivity comes as a result of that.
Peaceful Perspectives today. Your input, too, is welcome at 414-1234. We'll be right back. Pamela Chamberlain, Rachel Kelly, Julia Rose Denholm, and Dr. Cindy Bigby here with us on Perspectives, members of the Peace Alliance, and we're talking about the possibility of peace and how to actually put that rubber on the road in our own lives, in our communities, and we hope to some degree on a worldwide level at some point. To the phones we go. Bethany is on line one. Hey, Bethany.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, we're doing well. Long time no hear. How you been?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm so glad you're doing this today. I'm very impressed. I've known about Cindy's work for a long time, and I'm really glad Julia Rose is working with her as well and all you other folks. After hearing what you're doing at Palmer Monroe, gosh, it sounds incredible. My question is, why can't we do this and all the schools? Why is there not a curriculum that children can learn this and have to avoid the kind of consequences of not knowing how to have a peaceful existence with other people?
Can I answer that?
Yeah, please. Go ahead, Cindy. I can just see you wanting to jump in.
Sorry. Yeah, touche. I think it's really necessary. I have been in conversation with people at the district level, and I think there is interest. It does always come down to money and priorities, and that's it in a nutshell, just trying to find the funds to be able to make it happen. I've been working real hard to try to get a pilot program started at Rickards High School, and there is a lot of interest there, but again, it just comes down to money. So I think if there's more people knocking at the district door saying this is really, really important, this is what we want to see, I think there's a definite openness there and a willingness, and it's just a matter of getting the money to make it happen. And I do believe that it's right around the corner. You know, I have very, very good hope that we're going to start to see a lot more of this kind of stuff in the schools.
Well, while we're talking about that, you had also, and this is a great, I think, jumping in point for the whole restorative justice program. For those folks who say, okay, this is more like tree-hugging, liberal, feel-good kinds of things that have no tangible value to them. But you've done a little bit of research that indicates that there could be a payoff, a fiscal payoff when it comes to preventing violence and putting kids into the juvenile justice system, that sort of thing, right?
Yes, I actually have because, you know, I was interested to know because I am very – I really, really like the whole restorative justice process. We do a lot of that also at the Palmer Monroe Teen Center. And I know that there are some like the state of Colorado now has restorative justice as part of their juvenile justice system, and I think in their schools as well. And so I was just interested to know, okay, you know, what does something like that cost versus what we actually – what we typically do with the kids? And I started digging around, and I came up with some numbers. These are my own numbers. They're not validated by anybody else, but apparently – we typically use this cost of $5,000 for the expense for a child to go to court one appearance, and that's just them going to court. That's not, you know, sending them off to some kind of facility, which I believe the Florida Tax Watch estimated in 2010 that the cost to prosecute and place in a non-secure residence is about $31,000 per child. And then to prosecute and to place into secure residence is about $58,000. That's compared to one restorative conference, which costs approximately $300. That also compares to like the kind of program that I'm doing out at the Palmer Monroe Teen Center, which costs about maybe $2,000 per child.
I was going to say it's much cheaper to send them to like Florida State University, where it's like less than $6,000 a semester. Come on.
True. Very, very, very true. Yeah. I mean, so yeah, it is a money thing, but when we start to look at the dollar figures and you know. I do have to say, for the short time that I've been involved with the juvenile justice system, which is only – it's been about a year now, the Department of Juvenile Justice is really moving towards doing a lot more prevention work and putting more of their dollars into these kinds of programs. So, again, I am hopeful that we're going to begin to see more and more and more of this stuff.
Yeah, the outgoing Secretary of Juvenile Justice had talked extensively about that, kind of in her exit interview.
Yep.
That was one of the things she had tried to put in place were programs
and pray,
to do that.
Right, and I hope and pray that on her exit that whoever takes her place is going to continue on in that manner, because I think she had a very strong vision and, you know, we are, you know, perhaps slowly moving in that direction, but we are definitely moving in a direction of more prevention and these kinds of programs too.
Yeah, that's on the state level. Rachel Kelly, national level, you talked about that before too. Congress is working on something along that line.
Yeah, there is a bill called the Youth Promise Act, and PROMISE stands for Prison Reduction Through Opportunities, Mentoring, Intervention, Support, and Education. So this prevention and intervention aspect is really critical. And speaking of what's intuitive and what's not intuitive, you would think that small programs with one-on-one interaction would cost more than, putting people in big facilities. But it costs less. So, again, part of the win-win. And it saves lives. People are in these programs less time, and they're able to come out as productive members of our community. So, you know, even if I live in a good neighborhood without a lot of crime in it, I'm impacted by what's happening to everyone in the community. So on the local level and on the national level, part of what's nice about this bill, the Youth Promise Act, that's up before Congress right now, is that it gives federal oversight to these local programs, and it's only supporting evidence-based programs, so it's not a tree-hugging, utopian sort of thing. It does this work? Is this reducing recidivism rates? And that's where the funding goes, and it still saves about $5 for every dollar that goes in. So it's important to get passed. And why I joined these people, not only working on the local level, but once a month we get together and have meetings with, you know, our people around the country who are working together, and we'll work on, say, letters to the editor or getting up the nerve to go talk to our representatives at their local offices. And we have the support of each other, the community that we're in, just to get the word out. You know, again, it's not a hard sell, like you asked before about what's it like going to talk to them. there's nothing not to like about saving people's lives and saving money while you're doing it, and teaching people skills on how to communicate.
Members of the Peace Alliance with us here on Perspectives, 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809, long distance. And Kim is online, too. Hi, Kim.
Hi, yes. Sydney, keep up the good work. This is Kim Williams. Do you remember me from Rickards? I love the idea of what you're doing and what you're saying. But we do have a problem in America right now, and our country is really so still divided. I mean, if you ever listen to some of the talk radio shows like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, they're constantly berating and badgering the president and the United States and what they call liberals, et cetera, whatever. But this is that kind of speak really is hurting this country. Keep up the good work with the Peace Initiative. I'm going to try to get up with you so I can get in on it, too, because it is learned behavior. If you learn to teach peace and be peaceful, people can get along. I mean, this constant competition is really hurting the country, and not just the country, but the world.
Boy, great input, Kim. Really appreciate that. And Pam Chamberlain, if I can ask you that. As you said, peace is really instinctive. We do have an instinct for cooperation,
yes,
and conflict resolution and getting along with each other. But by the same token, if you live in an environment that is counter to that, as Kim said, where your baser instincts are reinforced constantly, that the only way to deal with the situation is to take a stand and not compromise and consider anyone a potential enemy. Can't that push you in the opposite direction?
It absolutely can and does. That's on an individual basis. I grew up in a family where, at an intellectual level, my parents were committed to peace and took peace action. As individuals in their marriage and their parenting, they succumbed to violence because they didn't have a skill set to live what they believed in their souls and their hearts. So when I became an adult, I began to have choices to make once I was on my own. I had to become conscious of me, my choices for peace. I deliberately went out and learned skill sets, like I'm going to Dr. Bigby's nonviolent communication. I'm not trained in that. I'm mentoring at the youth program. I'm going to that for my own soul, my own benefit, to really learn this technique, and it'll be years and years of working with it. It can be learned. So just personally, I'm a person who grew up with a lot of violence, and I've learned peace, and I can choose peace.
Okay.
And it is natural and instinctive.
Well, same thing, Joey Rose Denholm. If you look at a place like the Miccosukee Land Co-op, which based upon peace as its founding has been, and with an atmosphere that really promotes that, where that becomes normative. Normative is not getting a gun and going next door because the guy's tree is impinging on your air rights and, you know, threatening to blow his head off. It's, hey, you know, can we work together on solving this problem? Mm-hmm. How do you reinforce that beyond the organization?
Mm-hmm. What I've seen to be helpful is to really emphasize what we have in common. And for me as coordinator, you know, sometimes there will be different factions within the community, and I can get frustrated. You know, I get frustrated with, you know, this person saying, well, I think this needs to happen, and this person saying, well, no, that absolutely cannot happen. You know, and so for me personally, what's helpful to me is to realize and remember that the reason the conflict is there is ultimately, from what I think, is that the care is so much for the community, that these people are passionate because they care so much and because community is so important. And that's something they all share, you know. And then people might have different strategies about how to, you know, improve community. But ultimately, the need is the same for, you know, for connection and community and maybe even, you know, productivity and growth within the community. So if I can identify with that, that helps me relax a bit and not get so stressed out when I'm, you know, interacting with different people who have different ideas. And then also, hopefully, you know, that helps me maybe even facilitate greater connection between the two different sides of the viewpoint.
So appealing to the higher angels, kind of, huh?
In some sense. But it's also, it's just really, really reminding people that we are in this together. And people, you know, as you asked about the co-op specifically, people are there because they chose to be. You don't just kind of land there for the most part. You know, you really have to, you want to be there. And there's something that drew you to it. And so it's just remembering what it was that brought you there in the first place.
Yeah, back to first principles.
Yeah.
Kind of. But Cindy Bigby, if you're in a situation like Palmer Monroe, and you may have experience with kids coming in who we don't have the major metro gangs in this area, but you do have kids who are associated with certain groups within neighborhoods or whatever else. How do you strip that away where you get those natural points of conflict kind of? We'll leave those at the door, guys.
I don't really see too much of that, honestly. I really don't. So I don't know if I can speak to that so much. The work that we do when we're there is similar. It's the exact same thing, really, that Julia was talking about, which is trying to help everybody connect at a need level. That's NVC is based off of that all human beings share the same set of needs, and that when conflict arises, it's a tragic expression of an unmet need. We have not learned how to talk about what's actually going on with us at a need level. We've learned instead to blame and to make the other person wrong. But so if I have kids that are in conflict with one another, what I do is I help them to hear each other at a need level. And then once they can connect at that level, and it's not intellectual, it's really more heart-based, for lack of a better way of saying it. You know, it's more energetic. That, oh, I get that what's going on for you is a need for security or a need for safety or a need for some consideration. When they can really get it, but not in their head, but feel it, then all of a sudden there's a possibility to talk about, okay, you know, now there's some care there that we can figure out a different strategy to make sure everybody's needs are being met. That's the basis of this work.
And that harkens back to something that you'd said, Julia, a while ago, turning off the little voice in your head when someone else is talking.
Mm. And the beauty of doing this work and even being a part of the Peace Alliance, what I love about it is that I think Pamela maybe mentioned, I've always loved the concept of peace. I love the concept of peace, like probably from the time I was a little kid, like it was all about peace. But this work now for me is like taking this abstract concept of peace and making it very concrete and real and seeing it come alive in the interactions in front of me and also in my own interactions. And so when we started with the Peace Alliance years ago, they had a slogan which is be the bill. Be the bill. So we're doing peace very differently than how it was done in the 60s, right? Because a lot of people think of the folks that were, you know, promoting peace in the 60s, maybe sometimes were not so peaceful themselves, right? So, and it's not to say that I'm always peaceful, but now I have these processes that I could always go back to help me come back into peace. So, you know, I'm doing the work in the community, and that's awesome, but I'm also constantly trying, I'm doing it partially for myself because I want to live in integrity with my own desire for peace in this world.
And Cindy, you've said before also that even though it's heart-based and energetic, it's not a soft approach like some of these young people having to face the people that they
harmed. No. There's still, you know, if you are compromising in this process, you're not doing nonviolent communication because in nonviolent communication, it's all about making sure that your voice is actually heard. And there are definitely things like protective use of force. There's a place for protective use of force. The difference is, am I doing it to punish somebody or am I doing it because I have a need for safety and so I'm working from that need from safety? I don't necessarily have judgment of the person that's, you know, doing harm to me, but I have to put in place some things so that I can take care of my own need for safety. Mm-hmm. So, there's that part of all this as well. This is definitely not a soft approach. In fact, you know, this, along with restorative justice processes, the nonviolent communication stuff, it's some of the hardest stuff you're ever going to do in your life. It's hard work, you know. To put two people together in the restorative justice process, you know, the person who did the harm and the person who received the harm, you know, think about that person who did the harm that now has to look face to face at the person who received the harm and hear the effects of their behavior. There's nothing soft about that. it's a lot softer to just send somebody off into the prisons and they never have to actually be held responsible, really, for what they ended up doing. So,
And really confront what they caused, what they did.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we're talking about with restorative justice.
Oh, folks, time has whizzed right by. I really appreciate all members of the Peace Alliance who have been with us today. Cindy Bigby, Julia Rose Denholm, Rachel Kelly, and Pamela Chamberlain. And thank you very much for being on Perspectives today.
Thank you.
We next week are going to be diving into a topic that is preparatory to Father's Day, except we're going to be talking about dads right here on Perspectives. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox, Lydell Rawls on the connections, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We'll catch you next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.